On this episode, this is our special edition dedicated to ransomware. As of course, as many of you in the security community know, there was a new strain of ransomware running around, which had some very interesting things, although not necessarily new from some of the things we've seen in the past, but certainly garnered a lot of attention. And I've got some help from Amanda Russo from Endgame to help talk about that. Coming up next on this edition of Hack Naked News. This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show that brings you the security news each week. And despite popular belief, we do wear pants. It's Hack Naked News. You buy? You have a website, an external presence, employees, an office? Any of these things can be compromised and attacked. How are you defending these assets? Have you penetration tested these public assets? Start 2017 by taking a proactive approach to securing your vulnerable areas. Black Hills Information Security has been helping companies find their weaknesses since 2008. Email consulting at blackhillsinfosec.com and see how they can help you sleep better at night. Gain control of cyber risk with Tenable.io, the first vulnerability management platform built for today's elastic assets like cloud, containers, and web apps. Discover a fresh, asset-based approach that prioritizes vulnerabilities while seamlessly integrating into your environment. And improve ROI with the first elastic licensing approach based on assets, not IP addresses. Tenable.io delivers the data and context you need to secure your elastic attack surface. Start your free Tenable.io trial today by visiting Tenable.io. Good evening, afternoon, or morning, depending on where and when you're listening to this episode of Hack Naked News. This is our ransomware special edition, given everything that's been happening in the news and in our community is a buzz with, if I have to say WannaCry one more time, I might actually cry. But IT Pro TV's courses now include Apple Certified Support Professional, CompTIA Security Plus, and ITIL Planning Protection and Optimization. Premium annual memberships include all video content as well as access to virtual labs and Q&A forums. You'd normally pay $85.70 a month or $857 per year, but we have a special offer for our listeners. For a limited time, get 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription by visiting itpro.tv/hacknaked and use the discount code HN30. I am here with Amanda Russo from Endgame. She's the senior malware researcher for Endgame. Previously, she was at FireEye. And Amanda's here today to help us dissect some of the things that have been happening with this particular strain of ransomware. I'm going to try not to say WannaCry like 800 times. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Amanda, tell us a little bit about your background as a malware researcher.
Well, straight out of college, I got into the DoD Cybercrime Center, and that's where I picked up a lot of my skills. I did forensics, I did major crimes, I did intrusion forensics, and then after that, I moved into the commercial sector, and I started doing incident response, forensic incident response, and then I moved over to the Bay Area at FireEye, where I spent most of my time specifically in malware research, and now I'm at Endgame.
Fantastic. So, with this particular WannaCry ransomware, one of the things it highlighted, and I'm not sure if it's a perfect storm or an imperfect storm, but certainly there were a lot of circumstances that led up to the community being in this point where there's a remotely exploitable SMB service, which we've seen in the past. Patches were issued. There's the legacy issue where Microsoft's been saying for a long time you should disable SMB v1. Is this an anomaly? Is it that much different from the slammer worms and other worm-like behavior that's happened in the past?
Well, I think there was a lot of warnings out there, and it just comes down to old software that just hasn't been patched. I mean, you've seen a lot of these billboard screens having the ransomware image on it. So it seems like, you know, it's like set and forget. Let's just put this operating system on this device and let it go. So it's kind of those one-off things where people don't realize that they need to update. unfortunately, it comes down to patch management. I mean, we knew about this a month earlier. Even Microsoft knew about it. You know, it's a little bit obvious.
Yeah, and Microsoft had been recommending disabling SMB V1 for, I want to say, over a year. The person in charge of that particular software at Microsoft pleaded with the IT community and said, please disable this. And obviously not everyone was listening.
Right.
So it seems as though when I read about this malware, and I haven't dissected it like you have, Amanda, but when I read about the kind of high level of what this ransomware did and some of the aspects of it, my take on it after analyzing this industry for many years is I'm like, this really wasn't all that great a malware, actually. Did you analyze the malware. Did you have the same impressions?
Yeah, I even pinged Polar Toffee about this. I was like, hey, you know, why aren't these strings obfuscated? They're all ASCII strings. And then when I was going through it, I mean, it did its encryption correctly. They didn't have any private key in there. Definitely the ransomware authors would have to give you the decryption key. But everything else, it looked pretty basic. I mean, it's using scripts. It's using different EXEs to start up everything. And it was just more tedious to go through, but it was pretty easy. So when I looked at the exploit code versus the malware, the ransomware, I was like, definitely two different authors here. Mm-hmm. It just looks like they compiled everything together in the dropper binary and packaged it up and sent it out. So it just looked like they bought different pieces and slammed it together.
And now you are credited in a couple of articles I was reading as disclosing the password that was used inside of the malware, but that wasn't the password to decrypt files, correct? What was that password used for?
No. So there's a zip in the resource of the dropped exe, and that is just containing all of the information for configuration and the decryptor, WANA decryptor.exe. So it's just a password protected zip. Unfortunately, it's not going to decrypt your files.
I gotcha. Could it have been worse if it was more stealthy? It seemed to me also to be a very noisy, you know, scanning for port 445 and, of course, displaying the message to the end user and things of that nature. It was a pretty noisy thing. Do you think that was the skill level of the attackers? Was that done on purpose? Or what was the deal with that?
Yeah, so, I mean, the way that they package the, you know, the service to propagate, it really feels like it was just smashed together. I don't think they understood stealthiness to begin with because of their ransomware was, you know, very open. You know, normally I see from more, skilled malware authors, they'll do anti-VM techniques, they'll do anti-analysis, anti-debugging, and I didn't really see any of that in there. So I don't think they were going for that. I think it was more of a shock and awe. And if they're going out there for money, you know, maybe they don't really care about that. Another speculation or conspiracy is that, you know, the double pulsar payload is supposed to be a backdoor, right? You know, maybe is it setting the stage for something else? That's all speculation.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they weren't, so you didn't find any evasion techniques? Like, did it check it to see if it was inside of a VM or not?
No, not really.
Interesting. So your gauge on the authors, on their intent, perhaps, was it just to make a splash? Was it just for bragging rights? Or, well, you know, was it to garner attention? Or
Well, most ransomware, when they deliver it, they're just looking to make a buck. So you'll see them spin up different versions of ransomware with different, you know, catchy ransom pages. So, you know, it really looks like part of it was to gain money, but, you know, it could be something underneath. I don't know.
Can you just talk about the kill switch for a bit? Because that was the part where I read where I was like, wow, that was really dumb on the attacker's part to put that in there.
Yeah. So right as the dropper initializes or executes, you can see it calling out to that URL. And then if it doesn't, if it can't, you know, get to it, it'll just fizzle out pretty much.
Do you often see those kind of measures put into ransomware?
It's, you know, I hate looking at ransomware, to be honest. It could be possible that they have like mercy capability, but you know, it all depends on the authors.
Or is it that they put some of those back doors in so that if they accidentally infect one of their own systems, or they don't want their own systems to be infected, is like a safeguard measure inside some malware?
Yeah, that could possibly be a reason, but you know, it could be mercy for organizations that are critical. Who knows?
How does this compare to some of the other malware that you're that you've been analyzing recently? Is this a trend that we're seeing, or does this do things just like very differently from some of the other malware you're analyzing today?
Well, I look at completely different classes of malware. I focus on more anti-analysis and anti-VM techniques, and so I'm so used to seeing those that when I went through this one, I was just like, wow, this is so basic. You know, more backdoors, more rats, they'll take the time to evade antivirus. They'll take the time to evade or detect if you're in a VM or not. In this case, it really didn't show any of that.
And what's typically, you know, I find it interesting that when ransomware started becoming popular, it made me think about that the person whose the data is most valuable to is you, and they're definitely preying upon that. How does some of the other malware that you analyze, like what are the other kinds of intentions that you're seeing in other forms of malware?
Well, I've seen a lot of spyware. It's basically what it'll do is it'll scrape your clipboard for information like banking information or even your Bitcoin wallets. It'll take screenshots and it'll send that back out. These are the ones that are a little bit more sneaky, but definitely they try to hide their presence. That's the main difference between this and more stealthy malware. You know, this was more shock and awe. I have a countdown for my ransomware page. It's not really hiding anything. Except for its encryption key or encryption algorithm. I mean, you saw that the DLL and the ransomware was loaded into the heap and ran that way without actually dropping it to disk. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But it seems like a package that they bought rather than them doing it themselves.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I was really surprised. Not a lot of stealthy.
Yeah, it's like they just needed to be there long enough to get paid, and that's all they cared about.
Exactly, and they really didn't care about the user in that case. I mean, you saw I think Hacker Fantastic was saying, don't pay the ransom because you can't even reach the server to acquire the decryption key because they were getting DDoSed. So, you know.
So let's talk a little bit about detection. I mean, obviously, patching your system, disabling SMBV1, and there's a list of 1,000 other things in Active Directory that can help you stop from, you know, getting malware, as well as not clicking on stuff in phishing campaigns. But I think it's inevitable that your organization is going to have to deal with malware. So what are some of the detection techniques that you've been working on for all, you know, forms of malware and then specifically ransomware?
Well, personally, I've been focusing on preventing Mimikatz, especially it's credential theft or it's permission theft. So just a little kernel work there. But now I'm moving on to more anti-analysis techniques. So it's basically trying to evade typical antivirus on the system, making sure that, you know, why is this malware not detonating, that kind of thing, because we don't want malware to hide against our AV. And that's the kind of trend that I'm seeing, that more and more they're getting more aware of AV. And even in some of the WikiLeaks, we saw that AV companies had DLL search order hijacking capability. So they're using the AV binary itself to help propagate their attack, which is pretty interesting. You know, you're trying to guise yourself as a legit antivirus, even though mm-hmm. it's just.
So when you look to detect malware that's evading you, in some of the ways that they're doing their probing, can you listen for those probes? Like, I guess my question is, how often do other processes on the system probe for the presence of malware or look for the presence of anti-malware solutions or the presence of a VM? Like, how often does that occur?
It depends on the malware, again. Sometimes it'll just go through the registry and check for certain keys to see if they exist. And it'll look on the process table to see if there's any processes that are running related to analysis, like the sysinternals toolkit, mm-hmm. A debugger running, or something like that. But you'll start to see that they're evading by loading themselves into memory spaces. And that's where you want to start to look, is like, do you have malware in memory that's unbacked on the file system? So, and that's where we try to focus as well.
I gotcha. Are there other techniques that you're aware of that can be used to detect, when the dropper is deployed versus when ransomware starts encrypting something? Like, are there different stages where you can do some detection that are pretty well proven?
Yeah. Especially with the WannaCry sample, you know, once it hit our malware score, it immediately decided to intercept it. Even if it's, you know, trying to load that DLL into memory, it's gonna see like this weird memory blob that's, you know, executable. I mean, it changed the virtual protect executable. It made that memory space executable, so it's kind of like a flag. Hey, you know, there's something weird going on here. So there's different parts. I hate using buzzwords, but there's different parts of the kill chain that you can do.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I believe our capabilities have gotten better in that arena in understanding the behavior. And I think a lot of people claim, we have behavior-based detection. It's like, yeah, but what does that mean? Like, what behaviors are you looking for, right? And you gave a very good example, Amanda. You know, a process that are executing in memory is certainly one of those behaviors. So,
yeah, and the two go hand in hand, like, static analysis, AV signature detection, and then behavior analysis, these help each other out. There's some things that you can't scale with static analysis that you can with behavior analysis. What's weak in one helps out the other. For unknown attacks, behavior analysis might be the way to go, but it is more FP prone in that case.
Right,
so this
right.
general. So you'll have to, you know, weigh those two options together.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, Amanda, about doing some research on detecting the Mimikatz attack. I think that's very interesting in the context of our conversation, especially because this particular ransomware preyed upon, you know, a weakness in Windows, not just a missing patch, but also the inherent insecurities in a protocol that's really hard to disable. Mimikatz is in that class of exposures that I have for Windows Active Directory. In that, yes, in your domain, you can go ahead and disable the caching of credentials. However, if an attacker gains admin-level privileges, they can put it back, making detection for that vulnerability pretty critical, even if you've put the remediation in place. What can you tell us about detecting the Mimikatz vulnerability?
It's not necessarily a vulnerability. It escalates its privileges in order to access LSAS. So I haven't any further scraping of permissions for propagating through the network. So that was my main focus there. But I can only talk so much on that because it's a little bit of secret sauce.
Gotcha. No, but I think that's a valid approach because, you know, like I said, organizations that do put it in place, which I don't, I'm not an AD admin, right? I don't think it, of the list of things you can do in Active Directory, it doesn't break as much stuff as, say, disabling SMV1 in your environment when you have XP that needs to access file shares. You know, that's a pretty clear-cut case. Disabling the cached credentials, stored credentials, I think it's much more feasible. However, it's one of those weird things that an attacker can re-enable with admin privileges. So searching for that escalation of admin privileges is awesome. And I bet you it is an indicator of a lot other kinds of attacks, correct?
Right.
Well, that's cool.
Is it breaking everything down to its most basic form? You know, Mimikatz is very specific in what it's going after, but it's also applicable for other attacks that do the same thing.
Awesome. Is there any other research that you're working on now that you're at liberty to discuss with our audience?
I've been swamped with just reversing a bunch of anti-VM, anti-analysis stuff. So that's, I'm just starting like a new path with that. But, you know, it just started. I'm always so busy. So there's things that different directions I can go in. And with the WannaCry thing, you know, I just got off the plane and then it was like, oh, I need to reverse this. Okay. Whole weekend doing this.
Well, fantastic. Well, Amanda, thank you very much for coming on Hack Naked News today. You can check out some of Amanda's posts on the Endgame blog. Thanks again, Amanda.
Thanks.
IT Pro TV, an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. Access over 2,000 hours of up-to-date, high-quality video content live and on demand for a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account. Visit itpro.tv/hacknaked and use the code HN30. Has your network been breached? Cyber Reason can help you answer this question. Cyber Reason products hunt for threats within your network and eliminate them in real time. To Cyber Reason, real time means within seconds. Founded by former military hackers who don't play by the rules, they've built this experience into their platform. Harness ingenuity and imagination, not just code, to defeat attackers. Cyber Reason, disrupt the adversary and let the hunt begin.